but obviously she wanted to be paid, and had no idea what to expect financially. More than anything, she was ecstatic. The details could fall into place later. She wanted to savor the initial excitement of what was happening to her, and he was touched by how moved she was and how much it meant to her. He could see it in her eyes and the stunned look on her face. They spent 2 more hours talking, and he raved about the screenwriter again. Kate trusted his judgment. He knew everything about the business, and she knew nothing. He wouldn't tell her about the actors he had in mind. He wanted to do some research first about their availability before he got her excited for nothing, and he didn't want to throw out names who might not be a real possibility. Kate thanked him profusely when they left each other in the lobby. He was going to a dinner meeting, and she wanted to go home and just enjoy the moment or run around her living room screaming. Nothing this exciting had ever happened to her before, and this was only the beginning. It was hard to imagine what would come next. He had explained it all to her, but she had forgotten half of it by the time she got home. She was feeling dazed, and she didn't want to tell her children yet, until she was sure everything was moving forward. Maybe after they knew the screenwriter would work out, and she had signed a contract. Maybe then it would feel real. For now, it felt like a dream she was having, and she was afraid she would wake up. She had forgotten to ask Zack how much time would be involved, and if she would still be able to write her column. She would have to. She wasn't going to give up her job of 19 years for a pipe dream that might fall apart. When she got to her apartment and took off her coat, she sat down on the couch and tried to imagine what all of it meant. She felt like she was traveling in a country where she didn't speak the language and needed everything interpreted for her. She was suddenly a stranger in her own life. But whatever came next, she knew it was going to be one of the most exciting things that had ever happened to her. She could hardly wait for it to start. She lay in bed for hours that night, wide awake, running everything Zack had said through her mind, what she could remember of it. There was so much to think about. She didn't even watch Downton Abbey to calm her down. She laughed to herself, thinking that soon she would have her own series. How amazing was that? Zack called her the next morning to go over some of the details again. He wanted her to come to L.A. to meet with the screenwriter in 2 weeks, and spend some time going over everything with her. And he wanted to introduce her to 2 agents while she was in L.A., and said she would need one quickly for her contract. And by then he thought he'd have a better handle on what actors were available, and they could work on the casting together. That was an important part of the package for the network, and so was the director. He said he was planning to go top of the line, which sounded great to her. It was all thrilling. She thanked him seriously again before they hung up and she left for work. They had agreed that she should take 2 weeks off to go to L.A. if possible, and she had to ask the magazine for the time. It shouldn't be a problem, but she had to let them know. They were always flexible about her days in the office, and she could take her work with her and write her column and blogs on the plane or in L.A. Her mind was racing when she got to work and filled out the forms to take 2 weeks off. She wasn't going to tell anyone where she was going or what she was planning to do. She didn't want to jinx it, and nothing was definite yet. Nothing was formalized or signed, only a verbal agreement the network had made with Zack. But he had a golden reputation for delivering first-rate shows. She knew it was an insecure business where deals fell apart all the time and shows got canceled at the drop of a hat. She didn't want to make a fool of herself by telling people about it if that were to happen, at least until the deal was signed. And she didn't even have an agent yet. She was sure that it would all feel real to her after the contracts were in place, but that was still down the line. "How did your meeting go yesterday?" Carmen asked when she stuck her head in Kate's office on her way to an editorial meeting. She was curious after seeing Kate dressed up the day before, and she liked knowing what was going on. "It was fine," Kate said vaguely, feeling like a liar, but they weren't close enough for Kate to share something as confidential and important as that. She thought her children should know first, and it was too soon to tell them. It wasn't a done deal yet. "You look a lot happier today," Carmen commented, and Kate smiled. "I am." She didn't mention the time she was taking off to go to L.A. She couldn't without explaining why, and she hadn't come up with a good excuse yet. "Do you want me to grab some salads on the way back?" Carmen volunteered. "I'd love it. Mediterranean, thanks." They were good pals at work, but not best friends. "See you at one," Carmen promised. Kate filled out the rest of the vacation form after she left, and had her assistant drop it off at HR. It was an odd feeling, wondering if she'd be working there at the end of the year, or too busy with the show. She tried not to think about it as she opened a thick file of letters on her desk, with the most recent ones she had to answer for the column. It rapidly brought her back to earth. She had a job to do here, the same one she had done for 19 years, writing an agony column for Woman's Life. Hollywood could wait. It would have to for now. This was her bread and butter, and she wasn't going to forget that. But she was excited to see her story come alive, with real actors portraying the characters she had created. She wondered who they'd get, and then forced her mind back to the mundane realities of what she had to do that day. She and Carmen had a nice time, gossiping and laughing over their salads at her desk. "You keep getting this faraway look in your eye," Carmen accused her halfway through lunch. "What's up?" She wondered if Kate had met a man. "I'm just tired. I didn't sleep much last night." "You need a vacation," her friend said matter-of-factly. "I'm going to London to see Candace when she gets back." And then she realized she had the perfect excuse for the trip to L.A. "And I thought I'd go see Stephanie in San Francisco in a couple of weeks, and maybe Tom on the way back. I mean a real vacation, like somewhere warm. I could use some of that myself," Carmen said wistfully. "Yeah, me too," Kate said vaguely, and drifted off again, to her visions of L.A. and what was waiting for her there, or would be soon. "That's good advice," she said about the vacation. "Maybe I can talk Steph into a weekend in L.A. when I'm out there." Carmen nodded and stood up to throw away the plastic cartons from their lunch. A weekend in L.A. sounded sensible to her, if Kate was going to California to see her daughter. "Get some sleep tonight," Carmen admonished her. "You're already half asleep now." Kate laughed as the door closed behind her. But the best part was that she was wide awake, and the fantasy that was happening to her was real. She almost wanted to pinch herself to make sure it was. Chapter 6 The 2 weeks before Kate was due to leave for California seemed to move at a snail's pace. Everything in her everyday life seemed tedious now, and she could hardly concentrate on the letters she was answering, on subjects she had dealt with 1,000 times before. All she wanted now was to get to L.A. and find out what was happening with the project. She felt guilty going to L.A. without seeing Stephanie in San Francisco, but she wouldn't have time. Zack had 12 meetings lined up at the network to introduce her and to discuss aspects of the show and the direction they were heading with the storyline. He was having her meet agents and the director he wanted, and she had to spend time with the screenwriter. That was essential. They needed to get her started as soon as possible, once Kate approved her, if they were going to stay on schedule. And Zack wanted Kate at their casting calls. He felt it was important for her to see the actors, since all 3 women they would hire were the essence of the show, and it was essential that they felt right to Kate, so they didn't get off track from her concept, although the network would inevitably demand changes as they went along. There was a lot to do in the time Kate was planning to spend there. She didn't see how they would fit it all in. Zack called her 3 days before she was due to leave. When she heard his voice, she was suddenly overwhelmed with panic again that the whole project had been canceled. She still couldn't believe it was going to happen. It still seemed so unreal to her. But all the pieces of the machine were moving forward in the complicated mechanism of putting a show together. And Kate was well aware of how much she had to learn about it. The contract alone, conditions and benefits to her over time sounded so complex she could barely understand them, which was why Zack said she needed an agent and possibly even an entertainment lawyer, and he was going to find them for her. They had to take care of that immediately, while he dealt with the financial aspects with the cable network they were working with. and the front and back end arrangements, which sounded like Chinese to her. "There's someone I want you to meet," he said after a minute. He sounded rushed and busy, as he always did, juggling so many shows and trying to develop new ones. He always had 1,000 balls in the air, and this was going to be a big one, and would take a lot of work and meetings to get things started. They could have made a pilot themselves and sold it to the network later, which he had done many times. But getting the network involved right in the beginning was a much better way to go, and gave them a lot more money for production. This way, they already knew the network loved it and could produce a truly high-end show. They were still debating whether to shoot it in California or New York. They needed a location with plenty of room for Locke Wilder's airplanes, their air freight enterprise and charter business, and a small airstrip. They would be using several stunt pilots in the cast, and a whole fleet of vintage airplanes. Zack already had scouts looking for planes and locations on both coasts. It would cost about the same to shoot in either place, so the network didn't care where they chose. "She can see you tomorrow," Zack said cryptically, as Kate waited to hear the rest. "Who am I meeting?" There was a moment's pause before he answered, not for drama, but because he was signing checks for another show while he talked to her, with his assistant waiting next to him. "I called her last week, and she said she'd think about it. She's never done TV before, and needed to adjust her thinking to what television is now. It's not like the old days when there was a stigma attached to doing TV. Now some of the biggest names in the business are in series. She gets that, and she just called me back. She wants to meet you to understand the character better, and make sure it's right for her." Everything he said made sense to Kate, but she could hardly stand the suspense. He had hinted at this before. "We want her for the part of Ann Wilder, obviously. She's not old enough for the grandmother. I think she's perfect for us, if we can grab her. She'd have to be able to do work in features during the hiatus. She's not going to give that up for us. She's already won 2 Oscars and a Golden Globe. I promised her another Golden Globe for this one," he said, laughing, as Kate waited to hear who it was, but was already vastly impressed. "I worked on a film with her a long time ago. I was a lowly assistant then, and she doesn't remember me. She's an amazing woman. You'll love her, Kate. Maeve O'Hara," he said, as though mentioning some ordinary person he had met on the street. "Maeve O'Hara?" Kate asked with reverence and awe. "For our show? Are you serious?" "I'd like to be. Let's see if she is. She's not making any promises. She said she wants to meet you before she goes any further. I think you're going to love each other." In Zack's mind, Kate had some of the same qualities as Maeve, a mix of talent and humility, with her feet on the ground. "She said she can see you at 4 tomorrow. She suggested a deli in her neighborhood. You can share a pastrami sandwich," he said, teasing Kate. "She's a very down-to-earth person. She has 2 daughters who are trying to be actresses. I'm not sure they have her talent. Few people do, and they're very young. If we can sign Maeve for this, we have a sure shot at a major hit show. This story and the part of Anne are made for her. I want you to meet her before you leave New York and come out here. If we have Maeve attached to the project, we can get anyone we want. Other actors will kill to work with her. Knock her dead, Kate. I know you will." For an instant, Kate didn't know what to say. She was overwhelmed. "I'll try," she said, hoping not to seem starstruck or ridiculous, but she was about to meet Maeve O'Hara, one of the biggest female stars in the business, at a deli the next day. "I'm not used to this, Zack. I don't want to blow it." "You will be used to it by the time we get going. And something tells me that you two will wind up friends. Just be yourself, and tell her about Ann Wilder. I think she'll see how right it is for her. I sent her the Bible last week. That's why she called me back. That's going to be tough for her to resist, if it fits in with her plans. She's always working on something, although she said she's taking a break at the moment for personal reasons, and not starting any new projects. But that never lasts long with talent like hers. She's a workaholic like the rest of us. She'll be doing something again soon, and I want it to be this. I'll shoot her an email and tell her you can make it." He told Kate the name and location of the deli, and she jotted it down. It was on West 72nd Street. Maeve lived at the Dakota on Central Park West, where lots of famous actors, producers, writers, and arty and intellectual people lived. It was a well-known building of enormous old apartments with views of the park. She wondered what Maeve's apartment was like and if she'd ever see it. "Call me after the meeting," he told her, and they hung up. She had all day and night to think about it and worry. She was way out of her comfort zone and normal life, meeting movie stars of Maeve O'Hara's stature, but everything about what she was doing now was exciting. Whatever happened, meeting her for coffee in a deli was going to be a high point in Kate's life. Kate left work early the next day and took the subway from work to the stop closest to where she was going. It was north of Lincoln Center. It was a cold day, but crisp and clear, and her nose was red, her eyes watering, and her hands frozen by the time she got to the deli, Fine and Shapiro, and walked in. She saw Maeve O'Hara immediately, sitting discreetly at a back table in a parka with a wool cap on. People had already recognized her, but no one had bothered her. Kate approached her with her heart pounding, and Maeve smiled at her and seemed to know who she was. She was sipping a steaming cup of tea and looked just as cold as Kate. "I should have had you to the apartment," Maeve said apologetically, "but my husband isn't well, and I try to keep traffic to a minimum for him. Our kids live with us, and that's hectic enough." "It's fine, and I envy you that," Kate said as she sat down across from her, feeling like she was meeting an old friend. "Mine have all flown the coop," Kate volunteered. "Where do they live?" Maeve asked with interest as she studied Kate carefully and liked what she saw. Maeve was a few years younger, but not by much. She hadn't worn makeup and rarely did when she wasn't working. She had worn jeans and an old pair of riding boots and a heavy sweater under her parka. "San Francisco, Dallas, and wherever the BBC sends my middle daughter if there's a war on there. She's based in London." "That must be hard on you," Maeve said sympathetically, and Kate nodded. "My oldest daughter's at Tisch at NYU and wants to be an actress. The youngest one is still trying to find herself. She dropped out of college last year as a freshman, and is doing off-Broadway, and so far she has gotten some really awful parts." The two women exchanged a smile as Kate sipped her coffee and felt instantly at ease with her. They had their kids in common, and she could sense that, despite being a star, Maeve was an involved mother. "I keep trying to brace myself for the empty nest, but so far no one's going anywhere, thank God. They drive me crazy and keep me grounded," Maeve said, and they both laughed. "I'm going to be lost without them when they finally move out. I keep waiting on them hand and foot, so they don't want to leave. Food service, laundry, their friends drop by at midnight. Until Ian got sick, we had an open house. It's more complicated now." Kate didn't want to pry and ask what her husband was sick with. She got the feeling it was serious from the look in Maeve's eyes when she said it. She knew that Maeve was married to Ian Miller, a famous actor who had become a director many years ago. "I've read your column, by the way. I love it. I used to read it whenever Ian and I had a fight, to figure out whether to call a divorce lawyer or forgive him. I think you've kept our marriage together." She laughed, and Kate grinned, pleased that she read it. "You've helped me a lot with the girls, too. Contrary to common belief, 19 and 21 are not easy ages. One minute they're grown women, attacking you, and the next minute they're babies, and you want to send them to their room and can't. How old are yours?"
26 to 32,
a son and 2 daughters. "My son, Tom, lives in Dallas, and has become a Texan, married to a girl from Dallas. My daughter Candace is in London, and Stephanie, my youngest, works for Google in San Francisco. She's a computer geek and went to MIT. They're all different. I had them when I was barely more than a kid myself. Their father left when they were very young, and the kids and I are very close. I'm very close to Tamra and Thalia, too, my 2 girls. How do you manage without them now?" Maeve looked worried as she asked. It was the universal fear of many women. "I stay very busy, as my grandmother used to say whenever things changed. That was then, this is now. It's not an easy concept, but you're better off if you accept it and don't look back at what used to be." Maeve was trying to do that with her husband, and a cloud passed over her eyes for an instant as Kate said it. The two women seemed to understand each other instinctively. "So tell me about Anne Wilder. Who is she, really?" Maeve asked, moving on to the Bible she had read and fallen in love with. "I'm not sure how she happened. I just sat down to write a story, and she sprang to life. In a modified version, at a different time, I think I was channeling my grandmother, who was a brave and fascinating woman, totally gutsy, real and incredibly brave. And she had an amazing optimism and philosophy of life. She had some really hard times and never complained. She just did whatever she had to do to fix it. To be honest, thanks to her, I've always had a safety net under me to some degree. It was hard raising three kids alone, and we've faced all the same problems everyone else does. But my grandmother didn't have that net under her. She had to weave the net herself. She was smart and resourceful. She convinced me that I could face anything I had to." She told her grandmother's story then, and Maeve listened with fascination and respect for Constance Whittier and her granddaughter, who was so much like Constance but didn't know it or take credit for it. Maeve thought that Kate was brave, too, just as Maeve was trying to be, as the sands were shifting under her, and she had no map to chart her course yet. She was flying by the seat of her pants, as brave women did. Men were more methodical and women more intuitive. Anne Wilder is like that in the story I wrote. I love stories where women succeed against the odds in a man's world. It's 10 times harder for us than it is for guys, and it certainly was then, in aviation during and after the war, and for my grandmother in 1930, building a business and selling cakes and cookies to restaurants and grocery stores with 4 kids to feed. I can't even imagine how she did it. Maeve could see the tie between the fictional character and the grandmother Kate described. "I love women like that," Maeve said quietly, watching Kate's eyes and deciding to confide in her. "We're keeping it quiet to avoid the press, but Ian was diagnosed with ALS last year. It's been rough. He did all right until recently, but it's a degenerative disease and it's getting worse. We have nurses for him now. He's still mobile, but he's getting weaker. And his breathing is a problem. It could go on for a long time, but it's only going to head in one direction. He's very strong, and he wants me to go on working. I've slowed down, and I've been turning down projects. But when I read your story, Anne Wilder is who I want to be when I grow up. I'd love to do the project, but I'm not sure what I'd do if Ian gets worse quickly. I think we still have a few decent years left, but you can't predict that. One thing I do know, if I do it, we'd have to shoot it in New York. I won't move him to California. We have a good setup here and fantastic doctors, and I don't want to be away from him. If I'm working here, at least I'll come home every night, and they can shoot around me if he has a crisis." Kate was bowled over by what she told her, and deeply touched by her confidence. She knew that ALS was progressive, which would eventually weaken all his muscles and paralyze him, and ultimately it was fatal, though sometimes not for many years. The only person she knew of who had survived it was Stephen Hawking, but no one else had. And maybe Ian would survive it, too. She hoped so for them, although it was a terrible blow of fate to be stricken with such a terrifying illness. There were tears in Maeve's eyes when she told her. "I think you're already as brave as my grandmother, or more so," Kate said quietly. It always amazed her, the challenges that people faced in their daily lives. So much of it wasn't fair, and some people had such enormous courage. Maeve was clearly one of them, watching the man she loved waste away and die before her eyes, and she was still listening to details about Kate's project. "Only you can decide what's right, given what you're dealing with," Kate said, as she would have to someone who wrote in to her column. "No one can make that decision for you, or has the right to. Obviously, I would love to have you play Anne Wilder. It would be a dream come true for me, but it's just a TV series. This is your life, and that's more important. No one has the right to mess with that or try to influence you," she reminded her, and Maeve smiled gratefully. "Thank you, Kate. Ian wants me to do it. He read it and loved it, too. He says the role is pure me, and in some ways it is. I just don't know if I should work that hard right now on a long-term project, one that could last for years." Kate smiled at what she said. Thank you for your faith in me. It might give you some structure, or it might be too much pressure on you. I don't want to screw it up for you. Think of yourself, and do what's best for you and Ian, Kate said generously and meant it. It was just a TV show. Maeve and her husband were dealing with far bigger issues. I'll give it some more thought. I'd love to do it, and part of me wants to go on with normal life, which is what Ian wants. He doesn't want me sitting around and staring at him, and I'm intrigued with all these series. They're really working. The fans like them better than movies now. Kate sheepishly admitted to her then that she was addicted to Downton Abbey, and Maeve burst out laughing. Me too. I watch an episode of it every night on my iPad after I put Ian to bed. On bad days, I watch two. Which was precisely what Kate did. They chatted for a few minutes about how much they loved the show and how sad they were that it had ended. And then Maeve got serious again. The Wilder women could be even better, you know. It's such a strong message to women, to be resourceful and not let life do you in. Who are you considering for Hannibal, Anne's mother? I'm not sure. Zack is a lot more knowledgeable than I am, and I know he has some ideas. I don't know who yet. What about Agnes White? She's fantastic. I've worked with her a couple of times, and she's an incredible actress. She'd be perfect for the part. Is she still alive? Kate looked surprised. I haven't seen her in anything in years, and she must be ancient. Not as old as people think. I think she's in her early 70s, which is about right for this. She had some tragedies in her life, and became reclusive and stopped working. If you want her number, Ian knows her. He was a big admirer of the man she lived with, Roberto Leone, who was his mentor. They lived together for about 50 years, but never married. I have a feeling he was married to someone else and never got divorced. We had them to dinner once. They were an amazing couple. He was one of the great directors of our time and convinced Ian to stop acting and switch to directing. And Agnes is the best actress I know. She's my idol. She said it so warmly that Kate was moved and realized that she would be perfect for the part, if she was still working, or willing to come out of retirement and do the show. I'll talk to Zack about it. I never thought about her. I'd love to work with her again, if you can talk her into it. She's always been very quixotic and unpredictable about the parts she played. She was beautiful when she was young, but she always loved the challenging roles and wasn't afraid of them. She's a true actress. I've tried to follow her example, but I have to admit, I'd rather look good on screen than have them age me 40 years to play Queen Victoria on her deathbed. I've always thought you could be a good actress and still look halfway decent. I guess I'm vainer than Agnes. They both laughed at that, and Kate didn't blame her, and she was impressed to see that Maeve didn't look as though she'd had any cosmetic work done on her face, not even Botox. She was beautiful for her age, and she looked real, unlike most actresses their age, who were unrecognizable after too many facelifts. Maeve glanced at her watch regretfully then. They had been there for 2 hours, and the time had flown. The foundations of a friendship had been laid, even if she didn't take the part. And given what she was facing, Kate could understand if she didn't. Her husband was infinitely more important. Kate could sense that Maeve was torn between living a normal life and becoming a nurse, which would depress them both even more. She shared with Kate that Ian had said he wanted to see her coming and going, working and leading a full, healthy life, and he would live vicariously through her, since he could no longer work himself and missed it fiercely. Maeve said he had fallen in love with Kate's story and wished he could direct it. I should get back. I try not to stay out for too long if I don't have to, and the nursing shift changes in half an hour. I should check on what's going on, she said with a sigh and a smile at Kate. You have no idea how wonderful this has been. Whatever happens, I'd love to see you again. Besides, I need your advice about my girls. They both laughed at that, and Kate grabbed the check when it came. They squabbled over it briefly, and Maeve said it was just one more reason to meet again. And don't forget about Agnes White for Hannibal. Talk to Zack about it. He seems to have an eye on some big names, and she should be on the list, whatever it takes to convince her. I'll email you her home number. She may not have an agent anymore if she's not working. They exchanged information and promised each other to stay in contact and meet again. She always preferred working on projects where her great love, Roberto Leone, was the director. But if she likes your director, she might do it. Has Zach made a deal with anyone to direct yet? That would be an important factor for Maeve, too.
I don't think so. He's talking to a few. He wants a woman.
I agree, although Ian wouldn't. He always likes male directors better. The two women hugged when they left the deli. It had been a wonderful 2 hours, and it had gotten colder. It was 6 o'clock by then, and Maeve pulled her hood up and headed toward Central Park with a wave, as Kate hailed a cab to go home, thinking about her. She was a remarkable woman, and everything Kate had thought she'd be and more. She took her coat off when she got back to her apartment, as her cell phone rang. It was Zach, and he sounded stunned.
"What did you do to her?"
he asked in a tense voice.
"Nothing,"
Kate answered, sounding baffled.
"I thought we had a great time. Did I do something to offend her?"
"I don't think so, Mrs. Whittier," he said, his voice switching from shock to jubilation. "I just got an email from her about 10 minutes ago. 4 words. I'm in. Maeve O'Hara."
"Kate, you did it."
Kate was as floored as he was, and just as thrilled. Even more so, she was deeply impressed by the woman she had just spent 2 hours with, and knew she would make the show a huge success, and would bring Ann Wilder to life.
"We have to shoot it in New York for her, or the vicinity,"
Kate said. "That's the only condition she told me about." She didn't explain why to him out of respect for Maeve and Ian, since they wanted it kept quiet about his grave illness.
"I know. Her agent told me. I don't care. I would shoot it in Botswana if that means we get her. The network is going to go insane. We can't go wrong with Maeve O'Hara playing Ann Wilder."
He was over the moon about it, and so was Kate. It would make the show a sure success if they had a good script for her. She suggested Agnes White for the part of Hannibal, by the way. She said she'd be fantastic. Kate said matter-of-factly, "We can't. She's dead," he said smugly. And he had someone else in mind, who was good with comedy and might lighten the part, particularly if some of the dialogue was funny.
"I thought so, too. Maeve says she's alive. She's in retirement, or a recluse, or something."
"I'll check it out." But he liked his pick better, although the actress was being difficult and laying out a lot of conditions and benefits he didn't want to give her, and had a very tough lawyer negotiating for her. When they hung up, Kate saw that she had an email on her iPhone from Maeve, too. It said, "Thank you for everything. Here's to a great show. Love, Maeve." Kate stared at her phone and grinned broadly. The fates had smiled on them again. She wondered if this was how her grandmother had felt when she sold her first batch of cookies to the neighborhood restaurants. Maeve was going to be a huge part of the package, and attract the other talent they wanted. They were on their way.
Chapter 7 The 2 weeks Kate spent in Los Angeles were crammed full. She met with 2 agents on the first day, and selected one of Zach's recommendations. They were nothing like what she'd expected. She thought they'd be very Hollywood, in jeans, T-shirts, and gold chains. Both greeted her in enormous offices, at the 2 most important agencies in L.A. The walls were covered with expensive art by Damien Hirst, de Kooning, and Jackson Pollock. The men themselves looked like New York ad men or bankers, in impeccable custom-made suits, crisp white shirts, expensive ties, and serious John Lobb shoes. They were the epitome of conservatism, with short hair, clean shaves, and perfect tailoring. And their conversations with Kate were as serious as they were. She would have been satisfied to be represented by either one, but the second one, Robert Talbot, was slightly warmer, easier to talk to, and answered more of her questions, so she decided to go with him, and called to tell him an hour after their meeting. He sounded delighted, and assured her he'd start going over the contracts immediately and get back to her. When she saw Zach, she thanked him again. She looked at film clips of all the actors Zach was considering for the other parts. The actress he wanted for Hannibal was still being difficult, and hadn't signed yet. The actress they all liked best for the part of Maggie was an unknown, but she was perfect in the role, though Zack still wanted to attach another big name to the show to balance Maeve. The fact that Maeve had committed to the show made other important talent want to join them. They had a popular, sexy young actress named Charlotte Manning to play Crystal, the bad girl younger daughter. She had the reputation of being difficult and unreliable, but she was exquisitely beautiful, was 22 years old but could play 14 in the beginning, and had been in enough movies and series with short-term roles to have a face and name people would recognize. Younger audiences would love her, especially men. She had the right look for the role. She had dated every bad boy young actor in Hollywood, and rock stars who got arrested. She was so ripe for the part, and so hot at the moment, that the network loved her and was pleased. And they had a possible big star to play Locke, since he only appeared in the first few shows and then he died, so it wasn't a long-term commitment for a busy actor in feature films. On her third day in L.A., Kate was scheduled to meet Becca Roberts, the screenwriter that Zack had raved about. He had set up the meeting in his office at 9 a.m., and she showed up 2 hours late. Kate was there on time, and Zack kept assuring her that Becca was young and a little flaky, but she was great. When she finally arrived, she was wearing dark glasses and looked like she'd put on whatever clothes she'd found on the floor, with a pixie haircut that seemed like it had never seen a brush. She groaned as she walked into the conference room and saw Zack conferring quietly with Kate. "Oh, God, you're here," Becca said, melting into a chair at the enormous table, like a kid sliding into the back row in school, and asked his assistant for black coffee. She slouched in her chair and looked about 15 years old. She was 24, but Zack continued to swear she was the best and one of the hot young talents in L.A. "I'm really sorry. Yesterday was my birthday, and I got a little crazy last night. I came home at 5 a.m. My phone died, and I couldn't find the charger, so I had no alarm. Thank God my dog woke me up half an hour ago. I got here as fast as I could. The traffic sucked. I live in the valley," she said to Kate, as though that explained everything. They were off to a bad start. Kate was trying to be patient, but thought her excuses were pathetic. She couldn't imagine this disorderly, hungover waif writing a hit show, or even a bad one. She was waiting for her to say, "The dog ate my homework," next. "I love the Bible," Becca said to Kate. "I've actually been working on the first episode for the last week, and trying out some different directions on it. I'm not sure about the grandmother, though. I don't think we need her. She's such a bitch. I have an aunt like that. I can't stand her. I think we'll alienate the viewers. I think we should cut her out." Kate could almost feel the hair rise up on the back of her neck, as Becca said it. "The whole point is that she's tough on Annie in the beginning, but when the going gets rough, she comes around and even learns to fly to help the business. She's a good balance for the others," Kate explained, and Becca shook her head. "I don't buy it. And Bill, the oldest son who gets killed, reads like he's gay. He's such a wimp." Zack looked like he was going to cry, and Kate glared at him meaningfully, as though telling him they were wasting their time. She was not going to agree to anything the young screenwriter had suggested. The only thing she had in her favor so far was that Zack said she was fast, and could have a script ready to shoot by July 1st. Anyone else could stall them for a year, and the network wanted them shooting by July and on air in October. Maybe Becca could do it, but what would she write? Nothing Kate wanted associated with her show, not from what she was hearing. The only thing keeping Kate in her chair was Zack, and not wanting to be rude to him. "Why don't you show us what you've got?" Zack said calmly. "And we can work from that and see where it goes." "Can you print it for me here? Mine is broken," she said, pulling her laptop out of her backpack. She sent the file to Zack's assistant, who came back with 3 copies 5 minutes later and handed a set to each of them. It was Becca's preliminary work on the script for the first few scenes. Kate only got 3 pages into it, set it down, and looked directly at Becca when she spoke. "This has absolutely nothing to do with the story I wrote. If you don't like the Bible, you don't have to do it, but you can't rewrite the whole thing on your own. The premise of this is all wrong, and the dialogue is too modern for the time. This isn't a punk rock musical. It's a family drama, and starts in 1940.
We could speed it up, Becca suggested, and start it later. It's so old-fashioned the way it is, she complained.
It's supposed to be, Kate said tersely. That's the whole point. Ann Wilder succeeds and builds her business at a time when that was nearly impossible to do, in a field that was almost exclusively open to men and closed to women.
I get that, and I really like Maggie. She's kind of a tomboy. It would make more sense if we do her as a lesbian. This could be about fighting for gay rights in the 1940s.
It's about fighting for women's rights, gay or straight, Kate said bluntly, wanting to end the meeting as soon as possible.
I can take another crack at it, Becca said, glancing at Zack to rescue her, as Kate looked daggers at him and wanted out. Becca was wasting everyone's time and clearly wasn't capable of giving them the script they needed. But much to her dismay, Zack refused to give up. Becca was available. She wrote quickly, and he was convinced she could do the job.
Becca, focus, he said to her quietly. Do you remember when you wrote Devil's Daughter and you were completely off the mark at first and turned yourself around? You handed in the best damn script I've ever seen, and you wrote a hit show. You need to do that now. You're off point on this one so far, but that can change. This show could run 5 or 10 seasons, which would be great for you, but not the way you've interpreted it. You have to wipe the slate, clear your head, and try again.
She looked sobered when he said it, and both disappointed and confused.
You want a script like Devil's Daughter? She seemed surprised.
No, I don't. But I want you to do what you did then. You turned it from the worst script I've ever seen to the best one. I need you to do that again.
He was adamant and sounded strong. He wanted the Wilder women to work, and they needed a script right away. A great one, or the network would postpone it, or back out and shelve it forever.
You don't like this one, huh?
Kate and Zack both shook their heads.
Let me tell you something, Zack said bluntly. We have Maeve O'Hara to play Ann Wilder. She won't do a script like this. We've got Charlotte Manning to play Crystal. You can go crazy with that. But we're not doing an LGBT manifesto here. This takes place in the 1940s and 50s. It's about women in aviation, not gay rights, Zack explained.
I'm afraid to fly, she said mournfully, and Kate almost laughed.
Becca, do you want to do this or not? Zack asked her directly, almost as he would a child, and she nodded.
Yes, I do, she said in a small voice.
Then go home, work your ass off, respect the Bible we gave you, and come back when you have something to show us.
How long have I got?
She asked nervously. As little time as possible, because if this doesn't work, we have to attach someone else to the project, and the writer is key.
I get it. I'll be back, she said,
stood up, stuffed her laptop into her backpack, saluted both of them, and left the room with the laces of her Dr. Martens trailing behind her. Kate stared at Zack in dismay.
You can't let her write this script, she said anxiously.
The meeting had been a disaster, and Becca appeared to be completely incapable of relating to the story or writing the screenplay for the show.
Trust me, she does this. She's a complete mess in the beginning, and just when you're about to give up on her, she pulls the rabbit out of the hat. I've seen her do it several times.
We're wasting time, and she acts like a spoiled teenager. How is she going to write the kind of emotional content we need? And I'm not writing out Hannibal because she reminds Becca of the aunt she hates.
Of course not. Just give her a chance. I know she'll be back in 2 days with something we like better. Maybe not the final script yet, but if she gets a grip, she can do it.
He sounded sure. Kate thought he was crazy, and wondered if he was in love with her or sleeping with her. She couldn't think of any other reason to put up with Becca. In Kate's opinion, she was unprofessional and a mess.
She looks like she needs a month in rehab and a bath.
Kate had no patience for girls like her, who partied and couldn't do their jobs. And she was convinced Zack was overestimating her, whatever his reasons.
Just wait,
Zack said, and they went to lunch together to go over the casting again. They were having trouble casting the two boys. They had one strong possibility for Bill, the oldest son, and he was a big name, but he had a terrible reputation on set, and was known to screw anything that moved and cause dramas and jealous scenes among his co-stars, a headache they didn't want. With him and Charlotte Manning on the same set, Zack was afraid their bad behavior would slow them down. And the best option they had for Maggie was still the total unknown, and he wanted a name for that part. But the girl was very, very good. They had watched her screen test several times, and she impressed them each time they did. True to Zack's prediction, Becca was back 2 days later, with a totally different take on the script. This one didn't work either, but she was closer to the concept and had stopped trying to get rid of the grandmother and turn it into a show about gay rights. But this time, the script was dull, and Kate was bored out of her wits by page 5. "We're getting there," Zack encouraged Becca, not wanting to beat her up. "You need to try to relate to the characters more, and we need some fire in it. It's too flat." He gave her examples of the scenes that didn't work and those that were better, and she loped off again, promising him a third version after the weekend. Kate had been there for almost a week by then, and she'd had a nice email from Maeve wanting to know how the casting was going, and if they were considering Agnes White. They had live casting calls over the weekend, and none of them could deny that Dan Delaney, Hollywood's latest Casanova, was the best man for the role of Bill. They agreed to give him the job, with severe warnings to his agent that he couldn't misbehave on set. It was a great opportunity for him, and his agent swore he would tell him to be good and hold him to it. He would die during the first season, so they only had to get through one season with him and didn't have to worry about him long term. And they picked Brad Evers, a young actor who had done a few good shows, to play Greg. They didn't have an actor to play Ann Wilder's war hero lover, but they didn't need him till late in the first season, possibly not till the Christmas special, so there was no rush to choose an actor for the part. The role of Maggie was still up for grabs, and that of her boyfriend, Johnny West, but at least the roles of Bill and Crystal had been filled with young talent with big names, and the actor to play Greg was solid, too. They had gotten nowhere with an actress to play Hannibal. Their negotiations with the actress Zack wanted kept falling apart. On Saturday night, Zack and Kate had dinner with the director he was hoping for, Nancy Haskell, who had done 2 successful series and many important feature films, and had an Oscar to her credit. Maeve knew they were talking to her and said she'd be thrilled to work with her. She had no objection so far to the young talent they had hired. They had also signed Philip Green, a big film star, to play Locke, and had been pleased to find he would be free between films he was doing for the 4 episodes they needed him in. Nancy had worked with him before and liked him. He was professional and reliable and another big name associated with the show. They met Nancy Haskell at Giorgio Baldi in Santa Monica, near Malibu, where she lived. The food was fabulous, and the conversation lively. She was a talented, experienced, serious director in her 60s, and was excited about the show. She and Kate had a long conversation over dinner about the characters, and then Nancy talked about her recent travels in Asia, her passion for art, and her latest film. She was a fascinating woman, had never married and had no children, and had an insatiable curiosity about the world and people. She was currently studying Mandarin before her next trip, and planned to spend a month in India before the show started. She liked all their casting choices so far, particularly Maeve, who was almost certain to carry the show and make it a success. She wasn't as sure about Becca as the screenwriter, and Kate shot a dark look at Zack. And then Kate brought up Maeve's suggestion of Agnes White in the role of Hannibal. "If you can get her," Nancy said skeptically. "I don't think she's done anything for at least 10 years, since Roberto died." That hit her very hard, and Agnes hated getting older. "I don't have the feeling she wants to work anymore, or to play someone that old, although she's got the character for the part. She's a brilliant actress. She can play anything. But she's never done TV." Zack told her who else they were talking to for the part, and said she'd been difficult and their negotiations with her had stalled. Nancy promised to think about it. And then, at the end of the dinner, she brought up Agnes White again. "You know,
I think Maeve's idea isn't so crazy after all, but I doubt Agnes will do it. It would take a lot to drag her out of her cave. She had some pretty tough breaks for a while. Nancy didn't go into specifics, but whatever the reason, Agnes White had gone into retirement, and most of her old fans, and they were legion, thought she was dead by now. She was one of the old greats of Hollywood films. She never won an Oscar, but she should have. She must have been nominated a dozen times. Her best films were the ones Roberto directed. I'm not sure she'd even be willing to work without him. He was a staunch Italian Catholic, so he never got divorced and married her. They had a child at some point, which they never talked about. She's a very private person, and always was. Now she's more of a recluse. How does she look? Zack asked with mild interest. I have no idea, Nancy said honestly. I haven't seen her myself in 12 or 14 years. That's a long time. But she can act like no one else I know, even Maeve. I'd love to work with her, if you can talk her into it. I'm sure she hasn't lost her touch. Talent like that doesn't fade. It just gets better with time. Her words weren't lost on Zack, and he brought it up with Kate on their way back to Beverly Hills, after they agreed on how amazing Nancy was. Kate wanted her to direct the show, and so did Zack, more than ever. "Do you think she'll take the job?" Kate asked, loving her new universe and the people she had met. Nancy Haskell at the top of that list, after Maeve. "I think so," Zack said confidently. "And she's got me intrigued about Agnes White. Maybe you should try to see her when you go back to New York. I looked her up, and she has no current agent, and you said Maeve has an in to her through Ian. It might be worth a shot. You certainly worked your magic with Maeve better than I could have. Maybe you can convince Agnes White to take the part." He was tired of their battles with the actress they'd been talking to. He was ready to give up on her. "I'll try," Kate said with enthusiasm, and when they got back to the hotel, Zack suggested a drink to sum things up. Kate was tired, but enjoying every minute of what they were doing, putting the show together. He consulted her about everything, and they were spending almost every waking minute working side by side, although he had additional meetings as well for other projects, and his respect for Kate was obvious. He kept their relationship on a professional level, but he enjoyed her company, too. In other circumstances, if they weren't involved in a project, Kate had the feeling he would have asked her out. But the show was so important to both of them that neither of them wanted to muddy the waters with a casual romance. And a serious one would have been even harder. Without even discussing it, they both had opted to be friends and working partners, and stay clear of any emotional involvement. He was an attractive man, but Kate was relieved. She didn't want to spoil what they had, and neither did he. They had a drink at the bar, and half an hour later he was on his way home, and she was in her room at the hotel. The next day, she and Zack agreed that the best woman for the part of Maggie, Anne Wilder's oldest daughter, was their unknown, Abaya Jones. Maeve had seen Abaya Jones's screen test and thought she was fabulous, and predicted Abaya would become a big star, and Zack was sure she would. The network endorsed it on Monday morning, and an hour later, Nancy Haskell's agent called Zack and told him that Nancy had agreed to accept their offer to direct their show, and was excited about it. "We're on a roll," he told Kate, grinning broadly as they walked into his conference room to meet with Becca for the third time. They got along perfectly, except where Becca was concerned. Kate wasn't hopeful, but Zack stubbornly insisted that she wouldn't let them down. She was everything Kate didn't want: unreliable, scattered, disorganized, immature, and off the mark. She seemed more serious this time as she handed them each a short script for most of the first episode. "I got my printer working," she said proudly. "But this is still pretty rough. I did it over the weekend. I worked all night Saturday and last night, and I think I'm in the right place with it now. I read the Bible about 10 more times. Kate glanced at the first few pages, prepared to hate it again, and was surprised to find that what Becca had written this time closely reflected what Kate had tried to convey, and showed a deep understanding of the characters. The elfin screenwriter was terrified. "This is good, Becca," Kate said, stunned, and then relaxed into a smile. "Thank you.
I just had to clear my head and get into it. I did a juice cleanse this weekend. That always helps me think. I can't write when I eat a lot of crap, she said seriously, and Kate refrained from comment. But whatever it took, the script was infinitely better than what Becca had done before. I'm working on the second episode. I like that one better. I can email it to you both tomorrow. I think I've got it now. And the grandmother is a bitch we wind up liking and love to hate. It took me a while to get that. And the 1940s thing. And women's rights. And what they do with the old planes is very cool. And three women running the business. I like it a lot. Zach shot an "I told you so" look at Kate as they continued to read through it. And there was no denying the script was good. It was still in a rough state, but Becca had clearly understood the issues in the story now and done a good job. Give me 2 or 3 finished scripts by the end of the week, and if Kate approves them, I'll send them to the network and see what they think. Becca was the only screenwriter he knew who could write that fast. No one else would have done it, but he knew she could, if she stayed with it and worked hard. I did what you said. I focused. And I think I channeled some of it. I really want this show, Zach. The possibility of 5 or 10 seasons had gotten her attention and woken her up. Then write me the best scripts you've ever given me, he told her with a serious expression. I will, she promised, and left a few minutes later as Zach smiled at Kate victoriously. I think she'll do it, Zach said. She'd had him worried for a while, and his faith had been hard to justify to Kate. I'm beginning to think you're right, Kate said, smiling. Zach had an amazing knack for assembling talent, and people who complimented each other. He was a master at what he did, and Kate had deep respect for him. Let's see how it looks when the scripts come in. I won't hire her if they're not good, I promise, he said. And Kate nodded, impressed all over again with what they were accomplishing and how far they had come in a short time. She loved working with him and his direct, no-nonsense style. But he was kind, too, as he had been to Becca, and brought out the best in everyone. They wanted to do a great job for him. There were still some more people to hire. A costume designer, production assistants, all the technical advisors, and a historical advisor. But they had come a long way on the talent. The only big pieces of the puzzle still missing were the young pilot who had become Maggie's boyfriend, Johnny West, Ann Wilder's lover, and Hannibal, the grandmother. All three were important parts. By the time Kate was ready to leave L.A.,